What's up, Atlanta? Happy Saturday with Turtle. Here almost for a full four, full three and a hay, leading you up to Atlanta United pregame. Our buddy Abe Gordon pulling double duty the last couple of weeks, doing college football game time in the morning and then coming back for Atlanta United in the evening, as is my producer this afternoon, Eric Slaughter. You just heard him take the airwaves for a couple of hours, and now he is going to be where he usually is on a Saturday with me, and that is helping me get this thing on the tracks and off and running. So, E, hope you had a good show, and excited to have you riding shotgun as always.
Always, my brother. This is my regular Saturday date. Happy to be here, and I don't know if you heard, I was up in New England this week. I should have burned Gillette to the ground, and you know, maybe Atlanta United got a win by forfeit. That might be the only way they can get a win. So, but yeah,
well,
ready to go.
It feels like an effigy might be exactly what the Falcons need right now. Going into this weekend, we'll get to that in just a second. But Georgia Tech, I heard Abe and John Fricke talking about this earlier in college football game time every Saturday morning here, 8 to noon. Tech in a sleepwalk spot, and that's exactly what they've done until the fourth quarter. They let this thing get nearly out of control before Haynes King took back control of the offense and has a rushing and a throwing score within the last, like, 5 minutes of game time. But Georgia Tech, to that point, had done, say it with me, Carl Duke style, nothing until that point, embarrassingly so, against, I mean, let's be honest, Wake Forest is not a good football team. Georgia Tech was a 13.5-point favorite on the road, meaning a 16.5-point favorite if this game was on the flats. So the fact that it's now 17-20, Wake leading, not exactly the effort you thought you were getting from Georgia Tech, but they're looking to take the lead. They're driving right now with a third and goal as the fourth quarter just gets underway. So a lot of football to play, and you're not exactly confident until, again, just within the last about 5-6 minutes of actual game time, this offense has really turned it on. But until then, struggling would be an understatement. They couldn't do anything in this game. I mean, they would move it, stop, move it, stop, move it, stop. And again, Wake Forest, I mean, they're not exactly, you know, Ohio State that they're playing against right now. So I'll keep you posted. This one will be wrapped up in plenty of time before my show is over. But we got to talk some Atlanta Falcons. 404-726-0929. I'm not going to use the two-word phrase, because, frankly, I don't want to deal with it. It feels like it. It kind of is, but it's technically not. So I'm going to stay away from it. And that phrase, Falcons fans, is must win. This game feels like a must win tomorrow at 1 o'clock at Mercedes-Benz. It's not technically a must win. So, E, we're not going to call it that today. We're going to call it desperation. That's the word we're going to use today. Are the Falcons a desperate team heading into 1 o'clock's game tomorrow? What do you think? 404-726-0929. I absolutely think they are, and I'm going to tell you why right now. If the Falcons don't win this game with Marcus Mariota in at quarterback and Terry McLaurin out, if they somehow find a way to lose this game, in my opinion, they're staring 1-5 in the face. And if you go 1-5 and 0-2 in your division, your season's over. I don't know what the numbers are statistically. I tried to look them up the other day. But 0-3 teams have made the playoffs 4 times total in NFL history. So if you do the math, if you're 1-3, 1-4, 1-5, I would assume, as I joked around on Thursday, that it's not much higher. So essentially, you would have to clear out the rest of the NFC South, meaning win the rest of your remaining games, to go 4-2. And your margin for error would be so razor thin at this point, with teams like Seattle on the schedule, Tampa again, The 49ers are getting Brock Purdy back. You're going to face them after Buffalo. Because if you lose this game, I mean, I don't want to say it's a given, but it's essentially a given that you're going 1-4. You're not beating Buffalo on Monday Night Football. Like, you're just not. Can you? Yes. And that's why, we're not using must win. Because it's too early in the season to say anything can happen. Because it is. We're only in week 4. If this was week 14, we'd be singing a different tune. We'd be singing a different song and dance. But because it's only week 4, there's enough wiggle room for you to say, hey, this team can climb out of it. But if you get to 1-5, if you lose against the Commanders, and then you lose against the Bills, and then you have to go to San Francisco, who's getting healthy, I don't see a way this team isn't 1-5. And then everything's on the table. Firings, position changes, coaching searches, you name it, it's on the table. Maybe they get A.J. Terrell back, you can help the secondary, but this is the team right now. And then after the 49ers, you get a little bit of a respite with the Dolphins and the Patriots, two bad teams. But then you get the Colts, who are the surprise team of the NFL season. They're coming to town. Or no, that's going to be an international game, excuse me. The Falcons are technically the home team. That's a 9:30 a.m. kickoff here in Atlanta. International game. Colts are better than you right now. So, again, we're not using must win, but then you still have the Rams, the Seahawks, the Bucks again. Cardinals always give you fits. Jets and Saints. See, here's your soft landing spot. You get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You get a 5 out of 6 game stretch where the games are eminently winnable. So that's where you can pick up some ground if you lose it. But again, if you go 1-5, the chances of you making the playoffs are slim to none. So that's why, to me, this game tomorrow is a desperation game for the Atlanta Falcons. Do you agree? 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Or do you think they can weather the storm? Do you think they can weather this loss and still be fine this season? I just think if you do, I want to hear from you. Because I just think it's really hard to make that argument. I think it's really hard to say if you go 1-3 with the Bills and the Niners coming up next, that if you're staring 1-5, even 2-4 in the face, again, the infinitesimally small percentage of teams in the history of the NFL have been able to come back from a deficit like this. So the word we're going to use today, Atlanta, is desperation, because we can't call it a must win because it's technically not. So I'm going to, give everybody their grace, let everybody, settle into it, and we won't use that word or that phrase because it's not. And it's not fair to assign that before we know outcomes and before we know where things stand. So we're not going to use that phrase. To me, it feels like it, but I'm going to do the right thing and not use it. So we're going to go with the phrase desperation. Is tomorrow a desperation game for the Atlanta Falcons? Because I think it is. And I think it's hard to make the argument that it's not based on what you have coming up next. You also don't want to go into the bye week licking your wounds like that, right? Early bye this season, it's actually in your favor right now with the way things are. Who would have thought that? But, 2-2, I heard Mike Conti on Andy and Randy this week saying, if you're 2-2, you'd take that based on sort of the way you position the season looking at the schedule. And I agree to a certain extent, but it's the way that it's looked. It's looked so bad at times, so bad. The overwhelming majority of the time the Falcons have been playing football this season, they have looked bad. And even at 2-2, I still think you can make that argument depending on how the game goes tomorrow. Now, if they roll them over, if they do what the Panthers did to us a week ago and the Falcons win 20-0 or 30-0, okay, fine. If they stifle Mariota, he can't get anything going, and, you know, the young kids get after it with the pass rush again like they did against Minnesota. I'm up for it. I'll feel a lot better at that sort of a 2-2. But you go 1-3 into a bye week with Buffalo and 49ers again, who are getting healthy now and believe that they have a shot at their division. They're going to be hungry. I don't like the proposition. Even with the soft spot of the Dolphins and the Patriots waiting to follow you after that. So line up the calls. Got a segment to take your calls, 404-726-0929. So when we get back, it's going to be me and you on the phones on a Saturday. Again, is this, in your opinion, a desperation game for the Atlanta Falcons? I think it is. But if you don't think so, I definitely want to hear from you. 404-726-0929. I want to hear how you project the team to be able to withstand a 1-3 start with the Buffalo Bills looming after the bye week on Monday Night Football. I'll be very interested to take your calls and see what you guys have to think. We got a busy, busy show. We'll get a preview in of Commanders and Falcons from one of our buddies at 106.7 The Fan in D.C. If you missed my conversation with Dan Orlovsky on Thursday, I have that ready to go for you. Really, really awesome stuff from Dan talking about his viral Falcons breakdown and what's next for the team. So you don't want to miss it. A busy Saturday show. Chris Thomas Turtle with you until 6:30 on 92.9 The Game. Oh, man. Georgia Tech trying to give this one away, man. They were able to tie it up at 20 with a field goal. Made a stop. Got the ball back. We're driving. And then fumble recovered by Wake Forest with a little less than 7 minutes to play in the fourth quarter. Oh, boy. By the way, E, we're going to get to your calls in just a second. Is this a desperation game for the Falcons? 404-726-0929. We're not using the phrase must win because I just don't want to hear it. I just made an executive decision. We're not using the phrase must win today. We're using desperation. Did you see what Diego Pavi is doing today with Vandy? He's accounted for 5 touchdowns today. They were down big early.
They're winning.
Now they're all the way back. They've put up a 40 spot. Pavia with 5 more touchdowns today.
Well, he's earning his $3 million, $4 million, whatever he's getting. And Vanderbilt's ranked in the top 20.
One of the best backup the junk talk spots I've ever seen. He was talking all that smack before the season, and he has done nothing but back it up in style.
Is he an NFL quarterback? Is he wearing a jersey next year? No. So you got to take his money and run now?
No. If Dylan Gabriel is not an NFL quarterback, Diego Pavi is not an NFL quarterback.
Dylan Gabriel is a midget. Diego Pavi is at least 6 feet.
I don't think we can say that word, E. I think we got to say little person.
He's short. Okay, fine. Yeah, he's short.
Short king would be the phrase of 2025.
Yeah, but Dylan Gabriel knows he's not really, but I'm just being, you know, but he's a little, he's too small to be an NFL quarterback. Diego Pavi is a legitimate 6 foot. So if Spencer Rattler, who's only 5'11", I've met Spencer Rattler. So if you think he's not big enough to do it, I don't know. We'll see. I think he gets a chance. He's at least an undrafted free agent, at the least.
Oh, yeah, I've no doubt he'll be in the mix. I just, if you ask me, does he have a 10-year future in the league? I don't think so. 404-726-0929. James is in Gainesville. Start us off, James.
Hi, Berto. How you doing?
What up, man?
Well, I just want to say for tomorrow's game, I don't really see Atlanta winning the game. I mean, you're dealing with Dan Quinn, and I have a high amount of respect for Dan Quinn, and I think he's a great coach, and I think he's a far better coach at this point than Raheem Morris is. And what I wanted to ask you, too, for your perspective on it, was what do you think the difference in, like, Penix is versus, like, when they first introduced, like, Mariota and, like, Desmond Ridder, because we had, like, this is the quarterback future, we're going to go to the playoffs with him and all this, and I think they're forcing the issue with Penix too much, and we're going to blow a season trying to make him into a good quarterback. We need to develop him more. And, you know, and there's 29 other teams in the NFL that have done a better job than us going to the playoffs. And why do you think that is? And one last thing, in the search for a kicker, why haven't they brought up Lenny Craig yet? Do you have any idea why they wouldn't bring him out there to give him a chance?
Yeah, James, appreciate it. I'll tackle your last question first because it's the easiest to answer. Raheem Morris was asked that this week. He said Lenny is, quote, our developmental guy. So, James, that just means he's not ready, in their opinion. He'll be with the practice squad this year, getting himself right, and then he will hopefully next year be ready to take over as the future long-term kicker for the Atlanta Falcons. In terms of the playoffs and not making it, we've watched it, right? One epic collapse after another, right, James? What it comes down to is this team cannot be consistent. We've talked about it for weeks. We've talked about it since the season started. Why? Because it's happening all over again. The definition of insanity, I always joke at Chris Thomas tonight during the week with Oren. I have him repeat it for me on the air. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over and over again, but expecting a different result. That's what the Falcons have been the last 7 years. They've been consistently inconsistent. And inconsistent teams do not make the playoffs because you cannot predict what's going to happen on a week-by-week basis, right? So you cannot sit there and say the Falcons are definitely beating the Commanders because Mariota's out. No. Look what happened last week. I said it after the game. The worst part about last week's game was that I no longer trust this team against anybody. I don't think any win is a given this season. None. There's not a game on the schedule now that I think is a given, including the Saints. So, James, it's a tough spot for the Falcons right now. Appreciate the call. 404-726-0929. Scott's in Atlanta. Scott, go ahead.
Hey, Chris. How you doing today?
What's up, Scotty?
Hey. So, listen, this game should be just what the doctor ordered. I mean, last week against Carolina, you had grown men playing. Forget, you know, the money they make. Forget, you know, the team that they're on. They just got flat out embarrassed. As grown men, that should be more than enough to where they come back here and want to play with some pride. So what I fully expect should happen is not only the Falcons show up, but I think that from that standpoint alone, we're going to get a similar game to what they played in Minnesota. The defense is going to show up. We're going to feed Bijan the ball, and that should happen. But we know that, you know, what should happen doesn't always happen. But here's the deal. The Commanders don't have they don't have Jaden Daniels. They don't have Terry McLaurin. They don't have their top wide receiver. So this game should be exactly what the doctor ordered. Now, if you can't beat a banged-up Washington Commanders team without Jaden Daniels or Terry McLaurin, you've got some severe organizational problems that are from the top down. And they might be there regardless. But if you can't beat a banged-up Washington team that doesn't have those two players, you've got some severe problems. Now, what we learned last week, though, with Ike Hilliard, I firmly believe that was Arthur Blank sending a strong message that, you know, a performance like what we had against Carolina would not be tolerated and someone would have to pay with their jobs. Now, if this happens again where we look so anemic and inept on offense, I fully expect something similar like that to happen. Someone's going to have to pay with their jobs. And if that happens, it could be Zach Robinson. It could be somebody else. But at that point, we'd have a whole nother list of disasters because who's going to call the plays then? Is it going to be TJ Yates? Is it going to be Raheem Morris? Is it going to be someone else? I mean, it would just open up a huge can of negative worms if we lose this game. And really, we shouldn't. I mean, this should be – what I'm trying to say is this should be a game where the doctor ordered – you know, they're banged up. They don't have their playmakers.
Scott, here's the thing. You said it yourself, though, right? The key word there is should. And right now,
I agree.
The Falcons don't get a should pass on anything.
I'm just saying with Terry McLaurin out, with Jaden Daniels, when we got this schedule, we looked at this game and thought maybe it was a toss-up because, you know, the Commanders – with them are very good, but without them, with noodle arm Mariota, I mean, this should be this Falcons defense should score like 30 in fantasy. I mean, they should be getting sacks and interceptions left and right.
Again,
so thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate it as always, Scott. Again, there's that word again, should. Nothing's a should at this point with this Atlanta Falcons team, and that's the shame of it, right, Scott? Like, all the insight you just provided, spot on. I agree with everything you just said, everything about coaches in hot seats, about should performances, about expectations with the QB1 and WR1 out for them. And McCroskey Merritt's a little banged up too. The stud running back, they have a trio that they use. So if only two out of their three are really up to the challenge, because that's what the team is going to do. They're going to try to run the ball down your throat. And we'll see if they can do it, or we'll see if it's Minnesota. If it's Minnesota, then you know this defensive line is up for the challenge because they got all those sacks, six. But we'll see. I'm not entirely sure now, and that's what I was just saying before we took James and Scott, that my trust for this team has been shattered after that game on Sunday. I now no longer trust them to do any should that's out there. Nothing's a should. Nothing's a given. Nothing is supposed to happen with this team anymore after you put up a performance like that. Raheem Morris did speak this week about some of the changes that Scott was touching on. Let's hear from Coach before we get out of here for this segment. Raheem Morris was talking about moving offensive coordinator Zach Robinson down to the field.
We'll move Zach down to the field to be able to get that little cleaner communication for him, to be able to get it to him if something does happen along those lines, to be able to be more visual and see the quarterback and be able to do some of those different things, to have him have a clear line of communication with Mike to be able to help him out a little bit more. And we definitely hold some responsibility in those things, and we'll go out and do those things then. So we'll correct those things this week. We'll correct them throughout the process. It's how we practice. It's how we do walkthroughs, how we do everything else. So we'll get Zach closer.
All right. So that's why they're doing it. But what about the benefits? What about everything that comes along with the move in terms of the logistics of being on the field?
I think it's just communication that Zach can, you know, kind of get across down in the field. You know, that's how we practice. That's how we do our walkthroughs. That's how we do every single thing on the field. Those two got a great relationship, you know, out in the practice field, out in the game day, out on everything. So, like getting them closer to the action, getting them closer to the environment, getting them closer to the play caller, getting them closer to all those guys, being able to get the reactions and get a feel for what the temperament is on the grass as well. I think all would be helpful. And that will happen. That happened today throughout our process.
We'll see. I mean, you'll hear Dan Orlovsky later in the show. I asked him, is there an advantage to having a coach on the field as opposed to in the box? And he said, yeah. He said, you know, just the ability to go face to face, eye to eye after any given play, any given concept, something that didn't work, you know, maybe the headset's not working or the headset's not available, to have him always there in person might just make all these communication issues. Because it's not just timeouts. It's not just formations. It's play calls. It's assignments. It's getting to the line of scrimmage with the play set up with enough time to make accurate decisions. There's too many times that the Falcons are lining up for the play and there's 7 seconds left on the clock and Penix can't even go through his reads or look at the defense fully. It's you got to go, you got to go, you got to go. And when everything's rushed and sped up like that, you're not going to be able to do what you want to do. So it just hasn't been good. It hasn't been good. One more about the kicking competition. Raheem, they did add some kickers this week. This was him saying why that was necessary.
We got to bring competition in, you know, and like that's what we got to do. You know, you have to do that until you get it right. You cannot allow that to be the reason to have this stuff happen, right? You know, like we went 5-for-5 the week before, you went 0-for-2 this week, and you got to bring competition, and that's something we'll be working diligently at.
Yeah, and they brought in a couple of guys. There's some competition now for Romo. I don't know what's going to happen there, y'all. He goes 5-for-5 one game, 0-for-2 the next game, and not just 0-for-2. Those kicks looked absolutely horrible. So we'll see what happens, but I'm just not entirely sure about anything with this team right now. And it's just so unfortunate with all the high hopes that you had going into the season. All right, 404-726-0929. Appreciate our callers for checking in. If you can't get in on the phones, you can always hit me up on Twitter at C Thomas Radio. Got a busy, busy show for you. Next, we're going to check in with DC from 106.7 The Fan. Our sister station, Toby Alitzer, is going to stop by. We're going to break down everything that he sees from his squad. What are we going to see from the offense without Jaden Daniels and without Terry McLaurin? All that and more coming up next. It is a Saturday afternoon, a beautiful Saturday afternoon, by the way, in the great city of Atlanta and the great state of Georgia. 404-726-0929 is the number. Again, at C Thomas Radio is where you find me on Twitter. And we will be back with a live check-in from D.C. to see exactly what the Falcons are getting into tomorrow, 1 o'clock at home. And, of course, your coverage here all day long on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, and take us with you anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app. Falcons and Commanders tomorrow at 1 o'clock kick at Mercedes-Benz right here on 92.9 The Game. It all gets started with the Wade Ford Tailgate Show starting at 9, pregame at 11, kick at 1, postgame show, and then yours truly on the Falcons flyover, the first spot. E, you with me tomorrow? I think you are, right? Yeah, all right. So me and E tomorrow on the flyover, taking your calls, win or lose, to get a better insight on what may happen. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Toby Alliser from 106.7 The Fan in D.C. Toby, let's start here. What did you see from Marcus Mariota last week that allowed him to have success with the offense?
Yeah, I think Cliff Kingsbury did a really good job of putting together a game plan that really focused on his running ability and kind of doing read option sort of thing. So he had to make reads in that sense in terms of his ability to get through progressions. He didn't really have to do a whole lot in the passing game. I think there were really only a couple of throws where you'd say, okay, Mariota went through his process and was able to get to the second or third read, make a nice throw. His actual best throw of the day was almost intercepted because it hit Debo right in the middle of the in his chest, right over the middle of the field, and bounced up in the air. But that was probably his best throw of the day. Outside of that, stuff was kind of open for him. So I think for Mariota, you know, his ability just in ability to run and Cliff Kingsbury's ability to make it real easy for him, the picture real easy for him, I think those played together. And I think we saw a similar thing last year, and he's able to process things well. And I think what you're seeing is a guy that just fits perfectly in what Cliff Kingsbury asked him to do.
Without Terry McLaurin available, what are going to be the primary options for him?
Yeah, I think Debo is going to get a lot of work. You saw this last week where they were just finding different ways to get him the football. Even opening kickoff, he took back to the 27-yard line of the Raiders. And, you know, just in special teams in different ways, they're going to try to get him the football. And you saw this in end-arounds. You saw screens. And the numbers overall on offense weren't impressive, but just getting him the football any way possible, even if it is in the kick return game, I think Debo is going to be their main option. Zach Ertz will kind of be that middle of the field security blanket. But that's a big question we have here, frankly, is the running backs. It's kind of by committee. We all love Ja'Cory Cross-Kiemerit. We know him as Bill out here, seventh rounder out of Arizona, had a weird thing. He's probably more of a early day three, maybe late day two kind of pick if he's able to play his college football season last year. And you'll see some of that electricity that he has when he gets the football, but he hasn't run the ball a ton at each of these games. The most carries he's gotten in a game is 10. Last week, Chris Rodriguez handled the ball 11 times, and he wasn't even active the first two games of the season. So I honestly don't know. Jalen Lane, a rookie out of Virginia Tech, the fourth rounder, he was the rookie of the week after he had a 90-yard punt return last week. So he's electric with the ball in his hands, but I'm not sure how he's evolved as a route runner just yet. Luke McCaffrey's been a bit of a disappointment, third rounder from last year. He had his first touchdown of his career last week, but that was more of a bust in coverage than anything impressive that he did. And Chris Moore has kind of filled in, just a veteran who's been all around the league, and he was unimpressive during training camp. The thing that he was most known for was dropping passes, yet he's made a couple of nice plays so far this season. So that's a great question. I think Debo's going to be the answer, and then after Debo, it could be just about anybody.
Talking about Debo, when he first got there, there was a lot of reports about being out of shape and maybe being a malcontent, but it seems like everything is all's well that ends well right now, at least through the first part of the season.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, where there was a big discussion about Terry and his contract and the holding and all that. Debo's in a contract year as well, and when you get traded out of San Francisco, want to go get a fresh start, I think you see a motivated Debo in a lot of ways, and that he understands that he's playing for his next contract. And so he's not giving you a hard time. He had a lot of time to build some of that chemistry with Jaden Daniels during training camp with Terry being out. Obviously, Jaden not playing this Sunday, but he got enough work. And I think you've seen a more motivated Debo that looks more, I wouldn't say he's the 21 Debo that went crazy and was one of the best offensive players in football, but he's more close to that than he was last year's version, where he was slow. And I wasn't a huge fan of bringing him over here for a fifth round pick. It's fine, but then they also kind of guaranteed more of his salary, so he's making $20 million this year, and I'm not a huge fan of that. But you're seeing more of the guy that's incredibly effective versus the guy that's just kind of a a little bit of a washed-up gadget guy like you saw last season. So they're going to find different ways to get him the football tomorrow and be intriguing to see how involved he can be on the offense because, you know, last week, like I said, his big play was on special teams, but they got on the ball on offense, but he wasn't able to create really any explosive plays.
Talking all things Falcons and Commanders right here, 1 p.m. tomorrow on 92.9 The Game with our buddy Toby Alitzer from our sister station, 106.7 The Fan in D.C. You mentioned Zach Ertz. We know he came over from a Super Bowl winning product. He has a couple stops in the league now, but how has he been in the offense? Is he still a Mr. Reliable type of guy?
He's big time Mr. Reliable, and we joked last year, up until the final couple of games when it got to the playoff push, he was someone that as soon as he caught the ball, he was falling over. He was catch and fall Zach Ertz. But I think we called him no-yak Zach because he just didn't get any yards after the catch. But he's someone that you can always rely on, and he's actually had a couple of plays this year where he's been able to get some stuff after the catch. But, yeah, third down, you know, third and five, he's your guy, middle of the field. Mariota hit him a couple last week where, you know, gets right to the sticks, turns around, two guys around him. He's able to make the catch in traffic. He's not going to blow you away with speed or anything, but if there's a big play situation where they've got to pick it up, don't be surprised if Zach Ertz is the guy they're looking to.
Speaking of vets, Bobby Wagner and Von Miller on the team, what have you seen from them so far?
Bobby's good when he's coming downhill, playing the run and getting after the passer. There were a couple of plays last week, I think he finished last week with two sacks, a couple of pressures, some different things that they were doing. When he's coming downhill, he looks like the Bobby Wagner that you know. When he's trying to cover guys, it's a little bit different. So he looks old in pass coverage. He looks the same Bobby Wagner when he's playing fast and downhill against the runner, against the pass. And then Von Miller, they don't play him a ton, but in obvious pass situations, you can still see some of that burst. He had a nice rush last week where he's able to long arm the right tackle, DJ Glaze, and really didn't have a chance, got right to the quarterback. He's still got some pass rush juice. He's not the Von Miller that won Super Bowl MVP, obviously, but he's still got some juice. So in obvious pass situations, I think he's still got enough. And honestly, him and Dorrance Armstrong are probably the only two guys off the edge. Dorrance Armstrong has been incredible this year, but those are the only two guys off the edge that you're probably worried about in any sort of pass situation. So, yeah, both of them show their age at times, but there's still some juice left in both those guys.
The one thing the Falcons have not been able to do almost virtually at all is get the ball down the field with Michael Penix Jr., surprisingly enough, considering how strong his arm is. What's the state of the secondary? Could he be able to finally unleash it?
Well, so they're without one of their starting safeties. Will Harris is someone they brought in from New Orleans in the offseason to fill in for Jeremy Chinn. He broke his fibula last week, so he's out. So I think Jeremy Reeves, who's generally a special teams guy, he's actually played really well when he's had to step in as a strong safety this year. So he's probably going to get more snaps in that role. So maybe you can take advantage of that. But the corner room is interesting. It's been up and down. Trey Amos, the rookie, second-rounder Ole Miss, has probably been their best starting corner so far. Mikey Sanders still had a really good year last year as a rookie, but he's kind of struggled as he's gone from outside back to inside. He started his career in the slot, moved outside last year after there were some injuries and just lack of overall talent out there, and he played well at the end of last year as an outside guy. Now he's back inside, struggling a little bit. And Marshawn Lattimore, I mean, you guys are familiar with him, but he's kind of I don't know that he's the Marshawn Lattimore that you're used to anymore. He's incredibly physical, which he's always been, but he's incredibly physical and a lot of times out of position, so he ends up with a lot of flags. I wouldn't be surprised to see them try to do that against Washington because Washington likes to play man. They like to bring an extra guy, so they could probably push the ball down the field, but honestly, if you try it against Sanders still or Lattimore, you might have some success, but it's crazy to say a rookie just in his fourth or fifth game, but Trey Amos is probably the guy you don't want to test. He's just got such natural abilities. You'll see it if he throws the ball down the field. He's just got ball instinct. They haven't had a turnover, so he hasn't been able to get his hands on an interception yet. But in his ability to just stay stride for stride with guys and play the right technique and bat the ball away, he's been really impressive.
If this game was against, let's say, Philadelphia, would Jaden Daniels have played?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think that if this were a playoff game, there would have been a much more realistic discussion about him getting on the field. But I think, I don't know how much you factor in what Mariota looked like last week against the Raiders and all those things, but I do think they're trying to be extra cautious. This regime obviously wasn't here with RG3, but so many fans are drawing that parallel. And Washington fans are just so scarred from that you don't want to have that repeat. So I think they're trying to be extra careful early in the season. I can't definitively say that, yes, he would have played. I think there maybe is a little bit more than they're letting on. But at the same point, you know, if this were a playoff game, I think, you know, Jaden's been pushing behind the scenes to get on the field. According to Dan Quinn, the doctors didn't clear him. So maybe it's still a no, but I think there would have been a much higher likelihood, you're right, if it were against a divisional opponent in week 18 or something like that to make the playoffs.
Before I let you go, while I have you here, we're about a week away from some preseason basketball getting started, which is crazy to think about. Is there any heightened expectation for Washington this season after the offseason and a couple of high draft picks?
I wish. I wish there was. No, there's not. I think, you know, it's funny how the Wizards are. From the outside, I can understand where it's like, do the Wizards ever do anything? They're just so irrelevant, and it's largely true, but I think for a lot of people in the area, it's something where they were irrelevant for a long time, but then they finally, just a couple of years ago, brought in a new front office that people are on board with. So while this team's been irrelevant for 6-7 years, in reality, for the people out here, you're looking at it as, okay, we have hope after the last 2 to 3 years. And so, you know, I think fans had a little bit more regained patience after they made that move. But out here, they're thrilled about Trey Johnson, the rookie they took out of Texas. They're thrilled about what he's shown. They're going to be without one of their young guys, Koulibaly, to start the year. But, yeah, I think I don't know that there's expectations for them to be any better this year. We'd love to see them win some basketball games. But I think there is at least – hope and a trust in what this front office is doing to kind of build this thing to eventually get back to a point where it does matter and you do care about whether the Wizards win or lose.
What did you see from Alex Saar? He was the other player that the Hawks actually were considering drafting. What was his overall season?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was up and down. The play strength was a big question coming in, and you saw that. His defensive ability, though, and his fluidity on that end of the floor is really, really impressive. There was a month of December where it was everything you dreamed of, where he had a high efficiency shooting the basketball from outside. He was better inside. I think he maybe only scored about 10 to 12 points in that month, but it was more efficient and more of what you dreamed of. But his ability to impact the game defensively is everything that you made of it. And I think the nice part for the Wizards is they kind of just gave him free rein to play. And he could shoot threes if he wanted to. He could try to get downhill. He kind of do all those things. But really the big thing for me is you saw defensively he can be that impact guy. It's whether he can develop that offensive game. And on top of that, he's just got to get stronger. He's got to play a little more physical. I think when he's allowed to roam a little more freely, he's better. So I would have been interested. And we, something we were talking about out here when the draft was coming up was, you know, Maluach was on the board. And I don't know if that was ever a true possibility because they need to score. So they obviously went with Trey Johnson. But if you could get a true five where he can be the guy that kind of roams the floor a little bit on the defensive end and doesn't have to play inside at all on the offensive end, I think that's where he's better. But I've been impressed with him. I think he's someone that showed real promise and someone that you feel like you can build around. So I don't think Wizards fans are all that disappointed with what they saw his rookie season.
Toby, great stuff. Appreciate you as always. We'll catch on 106.7 The Fan in D.C. We'll talk soon.
Appreciate it, man.
All right, that is Toby Allitz. They're giving the skinny on Washington and Atlanta tomorrow. Falcons Commanders at 1 o'clock. And just I just was wondering, E, like, any hope for the Wizards this year? Apparently not. Apparently it's going to be another year where they're going to be a lottery team. And, hey, can you field the starting five of all lottery picks? I guess if any team can do it, it might be the Wizards. All right, when we get back, speaking of E, he'll have five NFL true and false questions coming up for me. We'll also talk some college ball with Dogs HQ insider Jeremy Johnson. All that and more coming up in a busy, busy Saturday afternoon here in the A. Georgia Tech and Wake going to overtime. What? I'll explain how that happened when we get back.